Primary elections in Alaska have sometimes changed the course of history. Come August, Alaskans are being asked if they want to overturn the main accomplishment of the state legislature last year, the way we tax crude oil produced in the state. Good morning and welcome to the first election edition of Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. In coming weeks, you'll have a chance to question candidates, but today, it's Proposition 1. Phone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. We will meet our panelists supporting and opposing Proposition 1 in a moment on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. So learn more at alaskainvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit alaskainvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, starting right off, I want to thank the listeners for paying attention to this program, and we'll try and get beyond the hyperbole, which is going to be continuing all the way up until people decide in late August what to do with this proposition. It's a simple proposition. It just says we're going to repeal an action of the legislature, which was called Senate Bill 21 at the time. But the language is all over the place, and the facts are, I'm not sure how much facts are in the facts often. So we're going to try and find a few facts here and give you a basis to at least think about this big proposition, because the legislature put a whole lot of work into this thing, and now people with a going into the voting booth could just simply overturn it and say, go back to work, you guys. You didn't get it right. And that's a big, tough decision and a very, very technical piece of legislation. So let's see how far we get. We got some fantastic panelists. There is a new organization. It's called No One on One. So it's not called No on One. It's called No One on One. It's been formed by the native corporations that are mostly involved in oil field services, but not entirely. And they've formed their own coalition to campaign against Ballot Measure 1. Tara Sweeney is Senior Vice President for External Affairs at Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. Tara, why in the world did your outfit decide to get involved in this?
Well, because we believe that understanding the facts on Ballot Measure 1, no one would vote to support Ballot Measure 1. It's a very simple term, and one that the Alaska Native corporations who were part of the coalition believe that no one should vote on Ballot Measure 1. Vote yes on Ballot Measure 1. We want people to vote no on Ballot Measure 1.
And why would no one want to reverse this action of the legislature that some call a giveaway?
Because it's a step backwards. And for an organization like Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, where oil and gas development is in our backyard and on some of our lands, Ballot Measure 1 threatens our ability to attract partners to develop resources on our lands, or on our ANCSA conveyed lands. And that's important for listeners all across the state, because through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, there is a provision called Section 7I, which is a revenue-sharing provision. And when organizations like Arctic Slope Regional Corporation develop resources on their lands conveyed through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, all 12 regions in the state benefit through that revenue-sharing provision.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm well acquainted with 7I. It doesn't hurt to remind people of it, though. Sitting directly opposite from me is Senator Bert Stedman, Republican of Sitka. Senator Stedman was a member of the bipartisan majority And he's a member of the majority now, which is kind of a Republican majority, wouldn't you say, Bert?
Yeah, Republican dominated.
And you, you basically, how are you going to vote on Proposition 1?
Well, I'm going to vote to repeal it, and I have a little different viewpoint than what's expressed earlier. I think if you look at the entities that have a direct financial interest, if you're a construction company, maybe one of the native corporations, maybe a bank, what have you, you have a little different viewpoint, possibly. But from my perspective as a state policy maker, my obligation is with the Constitution and look after the state's resources. And the state of Alaska is the only state in the union that owns the subsurface of minerals. And we are different from all the other states in the union. And as the steward of the subsurface, we need to make sure that we are fairly compensated for our resource extraction. And that's where Senate Bill 21 falls far short. Several years ago, there was a lot of work started at the Senate Finance Committee looking at ACES because it was dysfunctional and needed to be corrected, the old tax structure. And that process went on for a couple of years and then was finished up this year with Senate Bill 21 under a different structure in the organization. But nevertheless, the pendulum started to swing 3 years ago because it was recognized that ACES had some significant problems and risk exposures to the state. But I think the pendulum went too far. We used to have a tax structure under ACES that put us at a competitive disadvantage against some of our North American competitors. You can take Texas or North Dakota, Alberta, what have you. But under 21, it went the opposite direction. So quite frankly, we're leaving too much money on the table with 21, in particular in the legacy fields, Prudhoe and Kuparuk. That is where the oil is. That's where the money's at. Senate Bill 21 has some good areas in it. I think we got it fairly close to being right on the outlying fields. It passes the red face test anyway. It's a little low on the remuneration to the state, but it's within reason. But under Prudhoe and Kuparuk, it doesn't even pass the red face test.
There's still plenty of oil in those fields.
There's a lot of oil in those fields, probably 7 billion barrels.
But it does take more investment to keep them producing, doesn't it? You're not going to dispute that.
Oh, I don't dispute that. You know, the cost of old infrastructure, you know, costs go up. But let's look at that. I mean, the value there is $19 to $20 billion a year is the gross stock. It costs about $2.5 billion in royalties off the top that go right to the state. 12.5% royalties rounded off. International royalties are roughly 20, world average. So our royalty structure is a little wacky also. But anyway, so you take $2.5 billion off of the 20, and then it costs about $1.5 billion to ship it down the pipeline and across the sea. And, you know, that leaves you around $16 billion or so, $17 billion. And then you take out operating and capital costs. They're $4.5 billion for capital, and then another $2.5. You're down to about $8 billion in cash, pure cash, because we have a net cash system on the table to be split up between the federal government, the industry, and the state of Alaska. And you look at the remuneration coming back to the state, the resource owner. We own the oil, all the people in the state. If you live in Adak Island or in the far reaches of Southeast or in the Arctic Slope region, everybody owns it. The state feels not. The regional corporations have some subsurface issues that are different. But we own it jointly together, and we need to be fairly compensated on an international scale because we have an international scale legacy oil field. Prudhoe Bay is the largest conventional oil field in North America.
So essentially, the state is the oil throughput's going to continue getting smaller, as near as we can tell, without a good deal more investment. And the state is running into deficit in its spending. And your contention is that under Senate Bill 21, we already are not taking in as much money as we really should be. We could be taking in more money and would still remain competitive with other states like North Dakota.
Most definitely. In 2013, we were about $700 million, I think, north of North Dakota. So in 13, yeah, $762 million. So that was the discussion back then. We need to be competitive with North Dakota. Make us competitive with North Dakota. All the businesses go in North Dakota. My good friend sitting next to me is going to move his company to North Dakota. Good Alaska company. We don't want that to happen. No, I didn't want that to happen.
he just became a subsidiary of Arctic Slope.
Well, that's okay. You know, Doug Smith sitting here, he spent many hours in finance committee working on this issue with me. He is in the audience and I was chairing the table, but we're working on the same problem. So anyway, we went from $762 million over North Dakota, which was a problem, to $1 billion forecasted this year, FY15, we're going to be $1.4 billion under them. $1.4 billion. You are moving too much cash to solve problems were in the legacy fields. Again, you got to separate the issue here. It's not the $2 billion soundbite that's been in the press. The issue, as I see it, is how do you treat the legacy fields? And those of you that look at Goldsmith's article, go to page 37, Dr. Goldsmith from ICER, and the other fields. That's the issue.
So Senator Stedman, my feeling then from you is that you really want to get your hands back on this. You think if it's repealed, if S-21 is repealed by people voting yes on Proposition 1, that you can get back to work and make the adjustments you'd like to make.
Yes, the answer is not to go back in perpetuity to ACES. It would be you'd go back to default into ACES, and then we'd have to go in and either fix 21 or fix ACES. I don't even think Senate Bill 21 passes the constitutionality test. We are so far off on the splitting ratio of as an ownership state. I think there's a constitutional question too.
Whoa. All right, sitting here and having already been introduced is Doug Smith, CEO of Little Red Services, an oil field services company which has just become a subsidiary of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation and also a member of the No One on One Coalition. And Doug, it's great to have you here because you've been there. Were you there when the legislature was working on ACES under Sarah Palin?
I was watching it from a distance, but as most Alaskans, not as engaged in the process as we should have been.
Yeah.
And it kind of happened right under our noses, and it took a little while to see the impact, but it was real. And it affects every citizen here, whether you work at Target, whether you live in Sitka or Ketchikan. We all depend on a state revenue source that's almost 90% funded by oil taxes. And our permanent fund grows based on production, not on taxes. And so production impacts every Alaskan, no matter what your job is. There's no place to say you're not part of the energy community if you live here.
I would say that the Democrats, and I don't know if we have a Democrat in the room. I'm not really sure.
Well, I'm a bipartisan person, just so you know.
Yeah, but the Democrats in the legislature, in the Senate, who were part of the majority, the bipartisan majority, are basically saying that we got no assurance under S-21 that the money would be reinvested in the state. And, you know, that's a pretty tough argument. I mean, just nuts and bolts to somebody sitting next to you in a bar. I mean,
I think you have to measure results, right? Alaskans, we want to see show me, right? We definitely want proof of what's happening here in our state. So back in September, October timeframe, I invited Senators Wilkowski, French, and Representative Guerra to come to my office, of which they all three agreed to because I reach out to everyone's opinion on this issue. I took them down to a small fab shop in South Anchorage and walked them through where we're now building hot oil trucks with a local owned business. We keep 20 or 30 guys in that shop working and showed them the fruits of a change in our tax policy that was real people doing real work who otherwise may have been unemployed. And we moved that fabrication here from Canada, been traditionally done in Canada for many years. These trucks are between $1.5 and $2 million each. We're building our third one in that shop already, of which none of it would have happened without passage of a better tax policy. So, you know, my friends across the aisle, if you want to put it that way, have seen the proof of the activity. The other proof lies in what's happening in our activity in the field. And I've been in an oil field for 20 plus years. We've done a lot of maintenance under ACES, spent a lot of capital, got a lot of good capital credits under the ACES policy, but not a lot of real production-focused work. And the work we've been on since about last June or July have been mostly spend-focused on extracting more oil from our legacy wells. So as Alaskans, yes, you know what? We do have a great resource. We need to be thankful we have oil companies here willing to take the risk and make the investment. And, you know, we've kind of made this an oil company debate, and it's really not an oil company debate. It's about Alaskans who have a commodity to produce and sell, to pay our bills, to fund our treasury, to put the Alaska Marine Highway System to work. Everything we touch here in our state is dependent on a healthy economy. And we may not like it, but this is our economy, and we need to protect it.
And Steve, Doug brings up a good point. As an lifelong Alaskan and someone who has grown up with the oil field in my backyard, we have to look at the tangible results that SB 21 has created. And when you look at our fabrication facility with ASRC Energy Services, prior to under ACES, we had about 22 people working in that fabrication facility, working about 30 hours a week. Post SB 21 passage, we have over 100 100 workers in that fabrication facility. And they're hardworking Alaskans who depend on responsible oil development, and they're working around the clock to make sure that the oil industry continues to have the infrastructure necessary to thrive in this state. And repealing SB 21 is really a step backwards.
So let's pause here for a minute.
Senator Stedman, yes.
Over the last 10 years, we've went from about 8,000 people in the oil industry to around 14,600.
Wow.
It all just didn't start with the signature of Senate Bill 21. There's a lot bigger issue going on. In fact, it's a global energy issue that's driving the big train worldwide. And you can take it into North America, and then you could take it up into Alaska. And clearly, we were lagging under ACES in the scheme of things. But clearly, there's been huge employment expansion over the last decade. And I'm not going to sit here and argue that the employment is not escalating over the last couple of years with 21. I don't think that's the issue. The issue is, how is a state setting its policy, fiscal policy, around that hydrocarbon field, which they own, the people own of the state? We are going to get the jobs. If we have the policy set right, we're going to get the jobs and we're going to get fairly compensated. My argument is we're not going to get fairly compensated under 21, and the job creation is going to take place anyway. So,
and here's the decisions that have been made. I mean, we're in a lot of the work, as I understand, that's being done now is a result of decisions having been made in prior years. It's simply a necessary matter of the evolution of fields and the looking for more oil.
Well, I think that you got to be really clear there. What's a function of a oil field that's lasted longer than the original planned lifespan? So, yes, a lot of maintenance is happening, but what has changed in the last several months is the capital spend focused at production improvement and expansion. So it's tough for the listeners to understand this part, but my company, it does work from the wellhead down. The work we do on existing well stock helps to improve that well's production. When capital's going into maintenance of pipelines and facilities is important spend, but it's not putting more oil in the pipeline, which is essential to our state's livelihood. When you look at the change in spend in the last several months, these new trucks we're building are because spend is being focused at increasing production. So when you say, well, where's our guarantee? We'll measure it at the coal face of the activity, which is what's happening to the wells, what's happening to production expansion, not maintenance capital and job associated with maintenance. When you look at what our company did, I'll give you one well example. It's important to every Alaskan that hears this. We go out to JPAD. We work on a well. We put methanol down it. We do a hot diesel flush. We heat up diesel. We clean the paraffin out of the well. We bring the well back on. It's making 2,800 barrels a day more than when we showed up. this spend is essential to our state's livelihood. And so the spend shift is important. The additional capital coming in the form of rigs being added in Kuparuk, new rigs being negotiated, a plethora of activity that is shifted from the status quo, maintaining a declining rate of 6%. That's where we've been the last several years. You know, I was somewhat skeptical. What can we really do if we get our minds to it? So if you go back and compare the March, April, and Mays of the last 3 years, you're going to see that from 2012 to 13, we dropped over 6%. You compare the same 3 months to this year, we are flat, 0.1% decline from last year. Now, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, for Alaskans, just go look it up. It's all public information. It's not my spin on things. These are real numbers that are available to us every day. And Alaskans need to understand that we're coming up on a decision-making on August 19th that doesn't necessarily put us back at the table to fix what may be, you know, not the perfect tax policy. We don't have a piece of legislation in our state that's perfect because we have so many differing opinions. We're never going to get perfect. But if you say, should we go back to a policy that led to 6% decline rate, we are heading for bankruptcy just based on production. So we have got to find our way through this and say production will outperform what we're giving up, maybe on the bottom line, and recognize that capital being spent today that's reducing some of our intake into treasury are going to produce future barrels with that capital that will not have the same deduction in the future. If you look at some of the third-party expert testimony available to the public, you'll see that our investments today that's hurting some of our treasury take is going to pay off down the road, and we'll have more treasury dollars from that investment. But, you know, this is a business. We've got to look at it from a business sense and take away the energy that's charged up on both sides. This is a pure business decision by Alaskans. You need to be well informed before you show up on August 19th.
The projection of the production of our legacy fields 3 years ago was, we have a parabolic curve. We're in the bottom of a parabolic curve where it's smoothing out and you're going to have a long flat tail, was to go to a rate of 2-3% decline curve 3 years ago. I expect going forward that decline curve is going to be shallower, maybe at zero, maybe it's -1, maybe it's -2. Marginally, it's going to flatten out a little more. We're not going back to 600,000 barrels a day or 700,000 barrels a day, which this bill was sold on. Some of my colleagues voted on it thinking that we'd go to 1 million barrels a day, and it's just ridiculous. So if you just back up, before even Senate Bill 21 was contemplated, 3 years ago when Doug and myself were sitting in the Senate Finance Room, we were having testimony on the forthcoming production and the flattening of the decline curve. And we all agree, sitting in this room, I think, that we want a flat or preferably an incline to our production. Going to be very difficult and very expensive to get. Hopefully we get there under whatever tax policy.
I agree with some of that. But, you know, what we need to look at, too, is don't forget how we got to ACES. If you go back and look when ACES was passed, look at the production forecast for last year under ACES when it was being debated. Over 700,000 barrels a day was forecast to be our production last year, not 540 was our average. We have gotten it wrong every time when we leave it up to, you know, Juno or the experts to tell us what our production is going to be. You know, get with the people who make oil, right, which is guys like us. We have got to be part of that equation of saying, what can we do? What's it going to take? What are the additional costs it's going to take to keep more oil in that pipeline? And the reality of it is we've left it, sometimes Alaskans have, to too many people who are distant from the coal face. And so while I definitely appreciate, I think Bert and I are aligned a lot on trying to do what's best for our state, you know, we may just have not quite the same recipe how we get there, but I do believe it's too early to say SB21 is not working. We gave ACES a number of years, and we all recognize it didn't turn out the way the administration expected.
Well, Doug, when you talk about the hot trucks and all that, mm-hmm. getting the paraffin out, increasing the production rate from a given well, are you talking about a legacy field?
Yes, we are. Uh-huh. 90% of our activity is in legacy fields. We do support rigs doing new drilling. But when you look at the real opportunities for Alaskans,
and so your contention then would be that because of S21, the industry is willing to spend more now into getting more out of what is already in there.
Absolutely. Our best resource is what we currently have drill sites set up for, and it's the largest pool of oil we known available to us. It also doesn't have the permitting struggles we face with. I mean, look at CD5, a great investment happening. It's going to be a great addition to the production, but as we try to go west of there, try to get a gravel road in. We got to deal with every agency under the sun to let us develop resources to keep our state treasury going. And what we're talking about here is a much bigger issue than just oil today and taxes today. This is about the 50-year look ahead. And when you look at what we've been hearing, and it's the truth whether we like it or not, we got to have a very healthy oil base to support an LNG project.
Let's go for some callers. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. I'm so glad everybody is getting along, because it could be a nightmare. It could be an absolute nightmare with talking points going to be throwing back and forth. And instead, we're actually like talking about, the investment, what the investment is. And as Senator Stedman has pointed out, essentially, it's more a question than anything of whether Alaska is leaving money on the table that it should have. And he says, yes, and you're saying, well, maybe, but...
Well, let me address that
look
point
at the investment.
Very, very quickly here. Just one thing for all Alaskans to consider this. We're all homeowners, we're all in business, even if it means we're just going to work and paying our bills. When we let those leases out to oil companies, we said, here's the terms. A 12.5% royalty, or 16 2/3, depending which lease you have, and here's the current tax base that we're taxing at. You go out and you make a multi-billion dollar investment based on those terms. We have changed taxes a number of times, usually not going backwards, and maybe in our history we had a time we weren't collecting enough tax on our resource. But in reality, imagine a homeowner buying a fixed rate mortgage at 5%, you build your economy around that, and years and years come by, and next thing you know, you're paying 20% because the rate keeps changing. We know we may not like this deal, but the reality of it is we leased land with a set of terms and said, this is our terms. Come invest billions of dollars and produce oil for us. And now we continue to want to rewrite those terms every few years. Economic stability has not been one of our strong suits, and I think Senator Stedman will agree with that. You got to pick a pathway and stick to it to have long-term investment.
I'm thinking about a small business. If I were to start a small business, it's a store, whatever. I take a huge risk, and then it could be that what I'm selling in my store really catches on, and I get a bunch of money. I feel that I'm kind of entitled to that money, and if it was an oil company. And the price of oil went up to $120 a barrel, which it could do. They're going to take home an awful lot of money. under the Senate Bill 21, the state gets no progressivity here.
Well, what we have done, though, and Senator Stedman's the expert on this, he will tell you that Senate Bill 21 does protect our downside better than we had protected under ACES. There's no guarantee
with a caveat, I'll tell them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. but you know what? The thing is, guys, is what we have to understand, too, is that we've talked about low flow. How low can the pipeline go? How low a price can we still collect money? Alaskans better hope we never see either one of those cases, because it will be very draconian, our choices at that point. But when you look at this bill and say, look, what are we really focused on? We can all measure the market. We're looking at the $100 oil range, $105. How do we protect our downside while giving up some of the upside?
We're at about $110 right now.
It's $108 yesterday.
Yeah. And it's $110 today.
Yeah. So what? And another thing that we've enjoyed is the ANS price differential, right?
Yeah.
That's may not always be there for us to lean on. You know, right. With a lot of things happening in the oil market. So
we could probably bet on that.
It's a bit of a crystal ball for us as companies invest and go forward. But here's what Alaskans never hear, right? Is you don't hear about the Liberty project that didn't work out the way BP intended, and in 2012 took a $1 billion write down. We always think we want to be an owner state. There is a tremendous amount of risk in being a self-performing owner state if we want to run an oil field. You know, it takes deep pockets. And it takes lots of technical expertise to bring this oil to market. And so for us Alaskans, we need to celebrate that who's here, expect a fair deal, right? But the fair deal is we don't want to get back charged that $1 billion write down when something doesn't work out.
Let's back up a little bit. Globally, it's very common, in fact, it's the practice for sovereigns to readjust their fiscal policy as time and economic conditions evolve. So Alaska is not an anomaly. Every sovereign around the planet dealing with their hydrocarbon basins make adjustments as economy changes.
No, but we are a little more schizophrenic than most.
I don't think so. I don't think so. So that is very common. The international royalty rate's around 20%. So our royalty rate locked in back in the 70s is 12, the weighted average.
I remember an 80%, wasn't it? A 90% on Milne? I remember that. Huge royalty.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I don't know about that. I'd have to go back and check that. That sounds a little off. But so with that being said, that's normal. As far as the issues dealing with the downside risk, let's not forget that under ACES, and I didn't vote for ACES and advocate for changing it for years, but under ACES, we took a heavier upside on the revenue stream to give downside protection to the industry when the prices go down and the state comes up short. What ended up, the problems that we had with ACES is we had too much progressivity, it was too much complexity, and there was downside risk exposure to the state that we had to keep an eye on. Well, when we took out the upside revenue potential with 21 over ACES, we still have the downside risk exposure and the complexity. So all we were doing is moving cash. Now, one could argue, and Doug might, that we're better under 21 at low prices than under ACES. I've seen data going both ways. I'll give him the argument, say it's 21 will produce a little more revenue and downside risk. We're still broke. You can't take a policy where you take the upside and then expose yourself to the downside is a balanced policy call and then redo it and just take away the upside and leave yourself risk exposure on the downside.
In fact,
our credits now go up as price goes down.
I'm going to take a break and let you get the last word in this time around, Senator Stedman.
Oh, that's good. Doug was getting ahead of me.
And we'll go to Charlie from Homer after the break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized dealer for over 15 manufacturers, including John Deere and Bobcat, celebrating 60 years of business in Alaska. More at CraigTaylorEquipment.com.
It's Talk of Alaska. The subject is Proposition 1, whether or not to repeal Senate Bill 21, which restructured the oil tax in the state of Alaska. And we have an expert panel with us, and Charlie joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Charlie.
Well, thank you, Steve. Good morning, Bert, everyone. Good discussion. What we've forgotten about is there was another part of that lease, the technical aspects of the lease that require the oil companies to produce all the known oil that's producible off of the lease. They can't just go in and high-grade the good stuff off the top and then walk away from it and say, oh, we've got to have more investment. I'm involved in four different oil fields outside. I've been in oil business all my life. I'm 78 years old. I'm a sovereign. I have 20 and 25% royalty deals that I've been signing recently. The state's still down at 1/8% royalty, and not only that, the state provides part of the drilling costs and production costs. If we had the state of Texas providing the production costs for our properties down in Texas, they would have a joint interest in the business. They wouldn't have just a royalty interest. So it's very possible to have be an owner state be looking at things from a sovereign standpoint, just in the leasing business, not getting into joint ventures. If it's true that we pay 40% of the cost of the drilling new wells, we should be a business partner, joint venture interest in those wells, not just a royalty owner. So there's some disingenuity, can't speak the word right now, but there's a misdirect here. The oil service companies that are helping us increase the production out of the old fields, you know, they don't provide any income into the state coffers. If all those
there's jobs.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Yeah, Charlie, there's jobs. But anyway, wait.
There's jobs, but the jobs require schools and roads and highways and everything else in order to maintain, and we don't get any income out of that. We're living strictly off of the royalty oil.
Charlie,
and the,
this is Doug Smith, and so just you know, you, and we said earlier on in the show beginning that we were now a subsidiary to ASRC, but prior to that, I was a C corporation, and what that means in our state is I was a state income taxpayer. And as a small company, I paid more than $1 million a year in state income tax. So I do contribute to the state budget, and I do contribute by having employees who live in Homer, who go to the local facilities and buy goods and services. I have 8 residents there in Homer. So you come north, I have them in Soldotna, I've got them in Sterling, I've got them in Two Rivers north of Fairbanks. We're Alaskans who are spread out, and we support our communities. We give philanthropically. You know, we're very engaged, and I realize we're not a big taxpayer at $1 million a year, but for a small company, it sure felt like a lot of money.
Well, if you've got children and grandchildren, you're going to want to have educational systems for 20 or 30 years down the road, you've got to make some really important decisions right now, what you're doing, and keep all of us in mind as owners state. There are some of us out here that do have direct experience in oil business that know what's going on, and so let's don't be telling each other lies. Let's work the best deal out for the state of Alaska.
Well, absolutely, Charlie. If I could, Steve.
You, thank you.
You know, as I'm a mother. I have children. A 17-year-old and a 14-year-old, and Doug has children as well. And
in school,
and I have family in Homer, a number of family members actually in Homer, and we have a number of employees that come from the Kenai Peninsula. And to say that we are making choices not in the best interest of Alaska, ASRC's motto is to strengthen Alaska through our values. And our values are that we are going to be here for the long haul as an organization, as a coalition member for the No One on One. And if we don't get new oil down the pipeline, as a mother, as an Alaskan, as an employee of this state, I am concerned, certainly, about the state's ability to provide those services for my future grandchildren. And SB 21, in my opinion, rolls all of that back. It threatens the opportunities for new oil down the pipeline, and it certainly sets us back significantly.
You're saying Prop 1.
It's ballot measure 1.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, excuse me.
Yeah.
Ballot Measure 1 sets us back and threatens our ability to put new oil down the pipeline and for the state to provide those critical services for the future of our state.
I think that's an over-exaggeration. We repeal Senate Bill 21. Legislature goes back, works on this policy, gets the state in a fairer position as the resource owner, to be treated equitably on a global and North American scale. The state will have the ability to deal with its infrastructure, deal with its children. But let's not forget one thing. You're in business in a capitalistic economy to make a profit, not minimize tax. Your profit motive. If I had a service company in the oil industry, and I wasn't elected to look after the state, I'd be advocating for 21 because it'd be in my financial best interest. I'd argue that Senate Bill 21 is not in the overall financial best interest of the state. It's in the financial best interest of a select few in the state.
Senator Stedman, I have a question for you, if sure. I may.
Go ahead, Tara.
I don't know if I'll answer it or
can sure, answer. You know, that's your prerogative. I have a lot of respect for you as a policymaker and someone who's spent a lot of time in Juneau working on this. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm a regular Alaskan and am not in the weeds as you are, but as I hear you say, you know, we've got to make Alaska competitive.
Not in the weed like smoking reefer.
Right, yes. Down in the trenches. Okay. Does that sound better?
That's on the ballot.
That's also on the ballot, yes. But you're down in the trenches, and you're saying you want to make Alaska more competitive on a global scale, yet we've heard that argument under ACES, we've heard that before under ELF, and I look in at the overall, the long, looking back over a period of years, and the Alaska legislature has not made Alaska more competitive. We do not have a stable business climate to attract the necessary partners. So that argument for repealing SB 21 so we can go back to the drawing board again, as a regular Alaskan, as a mother, mm-hmm. I'm tired of that. We need stability.
Right.
Is that a question?
I hear a question in there. Let me define what instability is. Instability is when you go down to Venezuela as an oil company and you get nationalized. You know, when you go over to Russia and you get run out.
We're competing with those markets as well.
When you're sitting in United States of America and you have a well-fleshed-out tax system and a well-fleshed-out legal system, you are not going to get nationalized. You're not going to have a military come in and take over your oil basin.
Thankfully.
You're going to have a very stable environment. You will have policy discussions and arguments from time to time over the tax structure, which you can't avoid because of the economic changes globally, and it needs adjustments. So that's just an evolution of where we're at.
I think we can agree to disagree on the definition of stability.
Okay. And then let's also not forget, we have a basin that is not an open basin. We have a basin, unlike North Dakota and Texas, where you have private landowners and the industry is in negotiating with private landowners, you know, thousands of them. In Alaska, you have one sovereign. And you're negotiating with them. We have basically three participants, major participants, ExxonMobil, BP, and Conoco, that have locked down, and that's a good business policy from their perspective, locked down, and will keep that basin very tight and very close as long as possible because it's extremely lucrative. Prudhoe Bay is one of the most lucrative basins on the planet, measured by virtually mm-hmm. any measurement. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't forget that it is one of the elephant fields in the whole planet. So,
okay,
we're sitting in a good spot, and we're not.
And you're saying we're not all that unstable.
We're not.
Yeah. So let's go to Renee. Joins the program from Esther, and I know she wants to talk to you, Doug Smith.
Good.
It's actually a he, and it's one e at the end of Renee in this case, as opposed to the feminine spelling.
But all right.
Mr. Smith had said early on he wasn't engaging in spin, but immediately thereafter stated that we'd had, quote, several years of decline. Well, in honesty, and I don't know how old the people live to be at Mr. Smith's house, but several years, we've been in decline since 89, and that included when we were collecting zero severance tax under ELF in 15 of 19 fields. And severance tax is a bit of a misnomer in that severance is really the payment for the item. It's the sale of the item, in addition to royalties, property tax, and federal income. Throughout this deal, the major producers were claiming that they were paying 35% federal and figuring that into their portrayal of what they were paying under ACES. In fact, the GAO published a study saying that the one that was paying the most was paying 11%, and the others were paying less than that on down to zero. Now, in Judge Gleason's property tax case, they said they showed BP internal documents claiming that the pipeline was viable through 2074 at $40 a barrel. Now, and then in addition, one other point of dishonesty in the No on One people's ads is they're claiming four fields that were in process under ACEs as fruit of SB 21. So there's a lot of spin going on here for people who are saying they're not spinning. But at any rate, I think the last question is, when you have the major producers through No on One inevitably going to be spending between 15 and 20 million to retain SB 21 and portraying this as, you know, harping on the fact that at low oil prices, this gives us less revenue, right? Or more revenue, pardon me, that this gives the state more revenue. You got to ask yourself, why would hardcore capitalists pay 15 to 20 million in ad money to retain legislation that has them giving us more, not less, for our oil? Because if you can sell that one to somebody, I got some swamp property here I want them to look at too.
So, okay. Renee, you should probably give me a chance to respond, right? So,
yes, sir. Go ahead. I'll be offline listening.
Okay, so let me ask, how many of the documents by third parties hired by the state legislator to be objective participants in this process have you read? Like, for example, Econ One, Analytica, PSC Energy, on down the line, who did, that's my bellwether is associated with those entities who were hired in the state's interest by the legislature to analyze and compare our tax policy with others. And under SB 21, I have in front of me here a document from Econ One, one that we spent good Alaska taxpayer money to generate, a comparative for us, that shows where ACES, where SB 21 is, where Texas and our other competitors are at. And we're still substantially higher than all those entities in their analysis. So, you know, Alaskans do have to desensitize this. You need to take this away from being people's personal opinions or spins. You know, this is a great subject. It doesn't have to be spun.
So, but maybe aren't you cherry-picking a bit here?
Well, let me just add to this, because I'm looking at that chart, and that's one of the charts that gets my blood running that Doug has in front of him. It shows North Dakota at 11.6% tax rate. That's the state tax rate. That is not what you have to pay the royalty owner. And I defy any oil company to go to North Dakota and not pay the farmer to go on his land and frack for oil. I don't think there's one there that would not want a royalty. And the average, when I talked to the royalty council, asked them, what do the private landowners get? They're saying 25. So if you just use a 20% royalty, because the older royalties in North Dakota are a little lower than 20, so you just average it at 20, you'd have to add 20 to this 11. So you'd be up at 31. So this chart is extremely misleading. It's page 5 on Econ One's research.
Yet people are still flocking to North Dakota, with even the numbers that Senator Stedman is bringing out. There's still a number of industry people who are flocking to that market.
Oh, you betcha. Let's go to Palmer now. And Jim, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jim. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Well, I there's a number of things that haven't been said here, but I'll try and summarize them. Production, more production does not mean more money. We had 2 million barrels a day going through the pipeline in 1988, and the price of oil was, you know, $13 to $15 a barrel top. Right now we have a quarter of that amount of barrel of oil, and both the state and the oil industry are making more than 2.5 times the amount of profit because prices are higher. And the reason that that is happening is due mainly to price. So if we are going to actually even bump up production a little bit, like the ads say, that are all mostly sponsored by the oil companies, that doesn't mean that the state gets more money. It means that the oil companies get more money because the tax structure has changed. The other thing about competition is nobody was able to lower their oil price low enough in 1977 to make their place more competitive than Alaska, because people were flocking here. It was the oil boom. So there is no way that Alaska can lower its price or incentives low enough to stop people from going to North Dakota. All you have to do is drive a truck with a rig and set a well and drill it. That's not how we have to do business up here.
I think that's what Senator Stedman was trying to say. It says it's open country there.
Yeah, and so these legacy fields, and I'm glad that they mentioned that the legacy fields have such a good deal for the big three oil companies. They got so many incentives and so many benefits that it is as close to free oil as you can get. So when they enhance the field to get more oil out of there, it doesn't cost a lot. The other thing about the pipeline is if production is raised significantly, you're going to have to bring pump stations online, and there is so much wastewater produced in the processing facility right now, there isn't a lot of oil that can get into the line under the current circumstances. So if you just look at some basic facts about how much oil is flowing, how much the state's share can get out of it, how much oil can be produced, and how long the pipeline can last. If you get past that spin, we can have an honest discussion. But going back to SB 21, as Senator Stedman said, allows the tweaks that probably should have been made to SB 21, or to the ACEs, rather, to take place over a couple of years and make sure the state gets a fair share, because we wouldn't be in the big hole that we're in, and I haven't seen any evidence that shows that the tax change is helping the state, even if production rises.
All right, Jim. Well, I think that's where Doug was trying to go. He's saying we are beginning to see it.
Jim, let me just say one thing real quick. So you've got this, you have this huge well stock of wells that are old wells, and you're right, some of them are high water cut wells. And as you go out there and spend money in the legacy fields, we're doing sidetrack drilling, you drill some new infield wells that have higher oil rates, you're going to shut in those high water cut wells in favor of the higher oil rate wells. Using the same facility capacity, we can produce more oil. And what I'd say is we are benefiting because our royalty share, you know, the amount of barrels we get, the money from that is significant. It's in the billions of dollars each year. That money comes from increased production because we're getting that royalty cut off that. So for every 100 barrels we add, we're getting 12 and a half. I mean, we're not totally losing on this situation because of we're increasing production does help us.
Okay, just
is that the oil company? Because the ad says we're going to increase production 30,000 barrels a day. That's not much, but tell me how much the increase of the 30,000 barrels a day will provide in extra income to the state.
So if you look, let's just take a look at 12.5% of that becomes royalty oil. We get all that and all the value for that. The other 87.5% of that oil is new tax base for us. We do get the tax that oil. And so, you know, more production does give us more treasury dollars. And I realize we're all trying to find the right fence line to walk here between maintaining an interest of investment from major oil companies and small oil companies that are important on our state. You know, Kalis, a very successful year they just had this year. Repsol, Brooks Range is about to engage in surface development. I mean, we do have some new players in the state. They're going to be an important part of our future. But at the same time, Alaskans have to be very careful about our decision making and that we do find the right recipe here for both sides to have success.
If we're billions, if we're a billion and a half under North Dakota in 15, you got to factor how much money you've left on the table, not only what Doug was saying, the incremental increase if it's 30,000, 50,000 barrels, whatever.
We have to jam a break in here. We'll be right back. Okay.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are important members of our workforce, from healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants. Alaskans who are in recovery or experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, or mental health conditions are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages businesses to consider ways in which employing trust beneficiaries can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Well, so we have with us Doug Smith of Little Red Services, Tara Sweeney of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, both of them part of the No One on One. Opposing Proposition 1, Senator Bert Stedman, Republican of Sitka, who's favoring Proposition 1, and just about all the callers are essentially siding with you, Senator.
Well, I got these guys surrounded. You know, I got them right where I want them.
Yeah, right.
So we can have a good discussion.
Yeah, Calling in now, Senator Vic Fisher. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Senator.
Thank you, Steve. I want to remind the listeners as well as the participants that the Alaska Constitution says that our natural resources will be managed for the maximum benefit of the people. The statement was made earlier that ACES didn't work. ACES worked. It financed education. It financed services to the people, and we saved $17 billion. We're operating in a deficit budget situation this fiscal year. The state projects continued multi-billion dollar deficits in the future, and the money that was saved on the ACES is going to keep us afloat. Now, one of the things that has been emphasized, needs to be emphasized all along, that this, the people of Alaska own the oil, that they should get a decent return for the oil that is taken out of the ground. It's a non-renewable resource. If we just give it away at a lower tax rate, at a lower benefit to the people, it's gone. One of the things about SB 21 is that it is essentially a flat tax. Some people in this discussion so far talked about when prices, oil prices are low, blah, blah, blah. The thing is, oil prices will not always be low. They will not always be lower. They fluctuate. And the thing about ACES was that it took a decent share, sometimes too much, but it took a share that was proportionate to the increase in oil prices.
Okay, Dick, we're out of time. Yeah, that's the progressivity issue, and you brought up something that nobody else around this table had brought up, which is that there are many who think that ACES were just fine, and the evidence has not been presented that ACES didn't work.
Well, and the thing is that we're going to lose billions of dollars. The state made an analysis. What if SB 21 had been in effect over the past 7 years rather than ACES? And the conclusion of this state administration is we would have lost $8.5 billion.
Okay.
And you project
Vic
that
Fisher
into
is getting the last word.
You project that into the future.
All right. Thank you.
The state will lose.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
thank you so much.
Let's not overlook that constitutional. It's a pesky little document. Mr. Fisher was involved in writing it. It's a governing document in Juneau for the legislature. It is not the governing document in the corporate board.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank Senator Bert Debman and our other guests, and thanks to everybody working on the crew.
Made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network by First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Join the majority of Alaskans who understand that exposure to secondhand tobacco smoke endangers their health. The toxins in secondhand smoke go everywhere the blood flows, to all organs of the body, creating cellular changes that lead to cancer, heart attack and stroke, miscarriage and other diseases. For more information on how to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.